Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I gotta tell you, I really like that guy. If we had more representatives like Andy Levin in Congress, and maybe, I should put it this way, if we had more people like Andy Levin in the Senate, which is where we need them, because every good idea seems to go to die in the Senate. And I fear the PRO Act is one of those things, just like the $15 an hour minimum wage, that gets chucked out to make one of the conservative Democrats happy. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, you know, how big it is that the PRO Act was included in this infrastructure bill and why we need to do, as Andy Levin said, get in the streets, make the calls, get active around it. I've asked our good friend Sarah Nelson to come talk with us. Sarah is the president of the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
I'm always happy to be on the Rick Smith Show.
And it's always great to have you. I've been saying I want this PRO Act included in the infrastructure bill, and Joe Biden listened.
It's incredible. It's like you've got a direct line there, Rick. Direct line.
Direct line. Because, hey, look, I asked him to fire Peter Robb day one, and he did it.
Yeah. Hey, keep making asks. Keep making demands. We need you making demands. No, and seriously, I do want to just note that for anybody listening, we got to make demands on everyone. We have to be realistic. So there's two different things going on here when we talk about things going to die in the Senate and not counting on Republicans, all that. We have to be realistic about what we have seen up till now. And we have to have Democrats be willing to act without Republicans. But I don't want people out there listening to be confused about what our job is. We don't give up on anyone. We put the pressure on everyone. We put the screws to everyone. Because if we write off Mitch McConnell, let's take anyone else in his caucus, we are essentially saying that we don't care about the workers in that state or in a congressional district if it's a Republican in the House. And that's just not true. We're going to stand up for everybody. So we're going to put the pressure on everyone. And I think that is what is so great about what's happening in Bessemer, actually, is that, you know, we have been raising the narrative about why we need workers' rights. And I have to tell you, you know, of course, we need the PRO Act. It's way better than EFCA. EFCA was all about, you know, trying to get more membership. The PRO Act is all about giving power to working people. And restoring the full right to strike, making sure that you can get to those first contracts, getting rid of right to work for less laws, and really putting power back in the hands of working people. But, you know, most people don't even know what a union is. When I say, I'll see you at the table, they're like, is there going to be turkey there? I don't know what that means. They don't know what union means. They don't know what collective bargaining means. We have to do a good job of helping the public understand what it means. But I'll tell you what, they can understand it when they start to hear about the stories from the Amazon warehouse and not even being able to go to the bathroom or getting a ding if you're not touching a box soon enough and having more of a relationship with an app than any human being. Hiring $3,500 a day consultants to try to interfere with your rights. You know, it's exactly like the voter suppression efforts going on around the country. The two are exactly the same. This is about not wanting to give any power to individuals, to individual people, to the working people in this country. And so people are seeing that now. And so the PRO Act is actually coming alive for people. This isn't just some academic exercise about whether or not we're going to, you know, sign enough cards for something. This is about actually interfering with the right of people to stand up and say, I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm not going to take this crap anymore. And by the way, $15 an hour is not enough to live in Birmingham or in Bessemer. And it's not enough for the job that I'm doing, standing on my feet all day long for 10 and 12 hour shifts where you're yelling at me if I don't touch a box every 8 seconds. So, this is really bringing it to life for people. And I think that's why the PRO Act is moving. And then I got to say, it's smart of the president to put the PRO Act in this infrastructure bill. And, you know, whether or not it actually gets through that way, Rick, what we're doing is we are raising the stakes here.
We're educating.
We are defining the problem. Absolutely. Defining the problem that we have today with the inadequate, watered down, horseshit labor law that exists today in this country and needs to be fixed if we're actually serious about living in the land of the free.
You're right. One of the things, and I talk to new members all the time, one of the things that I always talk about is this sense of empowerment. The wages are better. The health care is better. The retirement security is better. All of that's better. It's the empowerment. And when I was driving a truck all those years, I tell my truck driving friends, I went out, the brakes were out of alignment. It didn't move until it was fixed. If the lights weren't working, didn't move till it was fixed. If there was something wrong mechanically with that truck, it did not move until it was fixed. I was empowered to do that. And yeah. I talked to a lot of non-union drivers. They're shocked by that because they're told, take it or go home. And to me, it's that empowerment that you get from having a contract that says, this is what it is, and this is how you can defend yourself, and having a grievance procedure to help protect yourself.
Yep. You know, on the safety items, we have whistleblower protections that exist. That exists because unions fought for that. But do you think a worker actually has whistleblower protections in their job if they don't have a union to back them
Nope.
in using those whistleblower protections? No, of course not. So I just also want to give a shout out to the flight attendants at Envoy Air who got a tentative agreement today in the middle of coronavirus. I want to note that this is an example of what it means to have a union in the middle of a crisis. Not only did our union make sure that this crisis didn't get put on our backs because we made demands on what the relief package was going to look like, and we got those demands met even under a Trump-McConnell regime because we had enough power with 80% of the aviation workers in a union. We had enough power to do what most people would say was impossible. But beyond that, so I said, listen, we got to set the narrative that workers are not going to pay for this crisis because, you know, the corporate elite will never let a good crisis go to waste.
Absolutely. They'll fill their coffers. You know that.
Absolutely. And so we set that tone. We said, no, you know, we're not going to pay for this. But today I'm so happy that we got this tentative agreement at Envoy because not only are we saying we're not going to pay for this, flight attendants at Envoy Air now are going to get to vote on improvements in the middle of this pandemic still. We're getting improvements, and they should get improvements. I'm not saying that that's an incredible thing, but if you look at what's happening across the country, what worker is actually getting a pay raise right now? And it's only where you see unions that that's happening.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's only ones that people have contracts. And I always point out that every CEO in the country has a contract. If the boss has got one, you should have one too. But this goes back to the beginning, the war between capital and labor. You know, the boss is never going to be your friend. I say this all the time. These companies that we have contracts with, they're good companies. They're nice. They work with us. We do all that stuff. They're not benevolent. They didn't give you this stuff out of the goodness of their heart because they think you're wonderful. They gave it to you because you fought for it, demanded it, and generations before you did that, which is why I think it's important to remember our history, but also to pull people in to, as you pointed out, be much more militant.
Absolutely. I got to tell you, you know, I'm talking about the 50-year anniversary of the book Strike by Jeremy Brecker. And I have a piece in the beginning here that I wrote to start off the 50th anniversary, along with Kim Kelly, who also wrote a piece that I just read again today. It's really fantastic. But we are talking about this on Tuesday. And what this book is really about is saying we have to know our history as working people because it's not taught in the schools. Because who is deciding what's in the curriculum in our schools? You know, it's not people who want us to know what the kind of power that working people have when we come together.
Right.
And so, you know, we it's really on us to help people understand the kind of power that we have and what our history is and what we have today because of what people fought for and died to get and what is at risk of being taken away if we don't organize like they did in the 1930s and 40s.
You're absolutely right. I tell new members all the time, you don't take for granted what you have today because you may give it away. People fought for this. People bled and died for it. And I look at the National Master Freight Agreement, which I worked under most of my life. I actually knew people who had their heads split open on picket lines fighting to get the things that we take for granted. You're absolutely right. But on the labor history part of it, you know, it's part of the reason that we do labor history in two. It's one of those things that I thought, you know, years ago we wanted to get little tidbits out to remind people that, hey, on this day, something happened where a worker struggled and, you know, either they won or they lost, but they still put up a fight. Because at the end of the day, you still got to ball up your digits and get in there and take a couple of punches, which is why I've always been such a fan of yours, because you're someone who, I'll be honest, I wouldn't want to meet you in an alley.
You know, Neil Cavuto said the same thing to me a couple of weeks ago. But
so there you go. Look at that. I didn't mean to be anywhere near him, but I guess you should take that to heart.
Yeah, no, I took that as a badge of honor. So, listen, we've got to be fighting. Mother Jones said, you will fight and lose, fight and win, but you must fight. And when people know that you're fighting for them, they're going to come along with you, and we're going to build power. A lot of people think that power is a limited resource, but the truth is that every time we act on our power, we actually increase it exponentially because other people see the results of that and they want to be a part of it and they're empowered by it. And once you get a taste of that, you won't settle for a bad deal and you won't stand by while someone else gets screwed either. And that's the whole idea behind union. And once people really get that feeling of solidarity and how powerful that is and how much it means in their hearts, this is usually what people are searching for in their whole lives and searching for it. And we have the answers for them in unions. So it's our responsibility. A lot of times I say, I need a union for my union, because you don't really get vacations when you are union activists. But that's okay, because the kind of fulfillment and energy and inspiration and rejuvenation that you get from being a part of helping people find their own power and make a difference in their lives, in their family lives, in their communities, is better than any pina colada on the beach. And so, this is something that it was amazing to go down to Bessemer and talk with the workers there and talk with them about how their lives and their mission in life has changed in the course of a couple months, because they've seen the way that they can work themselves to empower other people. And there's just nothing like it. And I have to tell you, I think they're going to win. I think we're going to have the results tomorrow. But if we don't win this vote, this is not over, because there is majority support in that warehouse. The only reason that the workers may not win on that vote tomorrow is because Amazon had all the money and all the control in the world to be able to even, thumb their nose at the National Mediation Board, yeah, and put a mailbox with a tent around it saying, vote here. All of that stuff, by the way, would get fixed under the PRO Act, because you don't wait until the end of the process. Amazon thinks they can just wait out the workers and demoralize them and hopefully eke out a win for the company and then have the workers either leave, because it's such awful conditions that actually the turnover rate is 100% in a year. And so they're hoping that if they do all these illegal things and get slapped on the hand afterwards, it's not going to matter, because they'll just demoralize everybody and make the union drive go away. That's not going to happen. So whether those workers win in the vote tomorrow or not, they've already won, because they have changed that whole community. And that community is going to make sure that they hold Amazon accountable. And other people around this country now understand what the problem is, which is going to increase our power to get the PRO Act done. And it all moves forward in that way. You know, his statement was BS, and he doesn't really believe it. But even Rubio was moved to say that he supports the Amazon workers. Okay, but this is a product of the labor movement being on the move. Conducting strikes, showing our power, organizing, raising the issue of essential workers, raising the issue of safety during coronavirus. And we have this shared experience now that we can build upon as well. And it is no small thing that we have a president who's willing to say, I'm a union guy, and actually back that up with actions like making the PRO Act central to his infrastructure plan. Because his infrastructure plan doesn't work unless workers have the power to get the value out of what they're creating for our whole country to use.
No, you're absolutely spot on. And real quick, since you brought up the infrastructure plan, and that's where we started, the aviation industry needs mass upgrades. Our airports are not great. I always go back to Thomas Friedman, who said he went from Beijing to LAX. It was like going from the Jetsons to the Flintstones. I don't necessarily like being the Flintstones. So mass investment is what we need.
Yeah, I mean, the airport's not much better than our roads and bridges, and it all needs to be upgraded, and it is time. I think was it Andy Levin who was just saying it's like having a house and saying that you're not going to upkeep the stairs in that house? Like, it doesn't make any sense. So, you know, we've got to invest, and yeah, I'm super excited about the fact that airports are going to be modernized and infrastructure is going to be modernized there. And it's crazy actually that the United States will be so far behind the rest of the world at this point because we haven't made the kind of investments that are necessary.
Yeah. But here's the thing. It still has to get past the Senate. So what do you think the chances of an infrastructure plan getting through, given the fact that McConnell has come out and said, you're not getting anything from us?
So, first of all, oh my God, we have got to stop listening to McConnell. McConnell doesn't matter.
I didn't bring up the other guy who said that bill's cruel and heartless.
Yeah, so listen, I mean, he doesn't have any power if we put pressure on his caucus. And, you know, I saw this on sort of a smaller level. We got so much support for our payroll support program for a workers first package in the two previous relief bills in the CARES Act and in the emergency relief in December. We had so much bipartisan support for that because we were out there holding everyone accountable. We also pressured our corporations to be on the same page with us. So we brought that power of capital to the table as well. But I mean, that's what we can do here. And if you look at what's happening right now and the kind of actions that the GOP is taking, which is about having less participation, trying to not make people's lives better, but trying to make it harder for people to participate in our democracy, this is the time when we need to be pushing forward and getting things done. So people are seeing the effects of the American Rescue Plan. And I'll tell you, the day that I was in Bessemer was the day that stimulus checks were hitting. And every single person had a story about what that meant to them and how they had been just hanging on throughout the year and what a difference that made in their lives. And they were standing a little taller that day. I mean, I just think about the way that that empowered people, even in their own lives, that they could go home and tell their kids, hey, we're going to eat well tonight, right? And so when we get these results, people are more likely to understand why their vote matters, why their action mattered, and that's going to raise expectations. And we're already seeing that happen. And I just want to note that we're already seeing the White House shift on the filibuster, right? Politics have been shifting right in front of our very eyes because people are not giving up. They're continuing to demand better. And our expectations have been raised because of the campaign like Bernie Sanders ran. Right. And so anyway, I just think, Rick, it's really, really important that we try to put our blinders on with McConnell and focus on the rest of his caucus, focus on the people in the House. Brian Fitzpatrick, for example, for the PRO Act. Hey, Brian, you're going to be for the PRO Act, but not for this infrastructure plan that's going to help your district as well? I don't think so. I think we're going to get Republicans on this, and we got to keep up the pressure on it. And the last thing we can do is say, oh, they're never gonna, because all that does is give them an excuse not to.
That's a good point. And we got to force them. We got to absolutely force them into it. You're right. Sarah, I appreciate the time. As always, great talk with you. Thank you for your passion. Thank you for your fight. Always great having you on.
Thanks, Rick. Okay. Good night.
Thanks so much, Sarah Nelson, president of the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Hello, I'm David Filman, executive director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are, not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing, so is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.